Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com. Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Simmery, and I am giggling and geeking out over here because I am so stoked to introduce to you today, Florence Williams. How are you doing?
I'm great, Timmery. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic. So Florence is a science journalist. She's an author. And the book that I'm enamored with is called Breasts, A Natural and Unnatural History. And it's sort of like a mixture of your science reporting background and, you know, also just like some personal narratives and that sort of thing. And it is fucking fantastic.
Thank you so much.
There's a whole lot of stuff that we could obviously cover because like it's a huge topic. And how did you decide which things to focus on? Because there's like a lot of different things covered, but obviously it could have been 1,000,000,000 pages.
Well, when you're writing a book about breasts and a whole book about it, you can actually cover a lot of ground, you know, as it were. So, but I wanted to take a scientific approach to breasts because Lord knows there's a lot out there in the world about other aspects of breasts, you know, sort of what they look like. And of course, we've all seen gazillions of pictures of them thanks to the internet. But I really wanted to know how breasts work and how they evolved, because they're these completely miraculous organs that I discovered really, you know, drove human evolution in ways that kind of aren't recognized or talked about. And then, of course, I was really interested in how breasts get sick, because that increasingly happens in our modern lives.
There's a whole lot of really interesting information about the connection between the environment and pollutants and that sort of thing. There were lots of different ways in which that affects breasts and both young women and adult women. Can you speak to that a little bit more?
Yeah, breasts are they're these amazingly sensitive and complex organs, and so because of that, they really change according to the world we live in. In that way, breasts are kind of this great symbol for really, you know, environmental health overall and what the environment can do to our body. So with breasts, they have really changed a lot in modern life. For one thing, they're getting bigger. And this is something we know really mostly from anecdotal evidence from the bra manufacturers and the lingerie industry. And they say, you know, 15, 20 years ago, the average cup size was a B. And now it's really a C or a C+. And the reason for that, you know, you may be thinking, oh, of course, everyone's getting surgery. And surgery actually is very common. But the main driver behind that is, our increasing body sizes in general. So all of our body parts are getting bigger as we, you know, enter, the realm of the modern diet. And so breasts are just one aspect of that.
And it's also, also affecting puberty as well.
Right, right. So there are other ways breasts are changing. Not only are they getting bigger, but they're actually arriving earlier in younger and younger girls. And so the age of the onset of breast development has, it's changed about a year in the last 15, 20 years. So, you know, people, you hear anecdotally, people say, oh, I can't believe how many, you know, girls have breasts in third and fourth grade. And it's true. It's a different, it's kind of a different classroom than it was, you know, when I was a kid. And people are very interested in figuring out why that is. And people are also concerned about it because when girls go through puberty earlier, they're at higher risk for breast cancer later on. And they're also at higher risk for things like sexual abuse and substance abuse and depression. So in some ways, you know, their bodies are kind of developing faster, you know, than their brains are. And that creates some problems for people. So the researchers are trying very hard to sort of learn why girls are going through puberty earlier. And one theory is, again, kind of this Western diet, you know, has changed kind of the way our bodies are growing. But it also looks like there may be an environmental chemical role as well, so that some industrial compounds, you know, mimic estrogen and affect the hormone systems in our bodies.
I was very struck by your story about you and your daughter and the way that you went on a diet that dramatically changed some important readings. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I've been paying a lot of attention to a federally funded study that is measuring girls' bloodstreams and urine for different compounds that are known to affect hormone systems. So some of those compounds are things like BPA, which is found in the linings of tin cans, canned food. It's also in dental sealants and, you know, all kinds of products, water bottles. Used to be in a lot of water bottles. Phthalates, which are added to plastics to sometimes make them softer. And they're also in personal care products because they stabilize scents.
And then, sex toys, too. When we talk about phthalates.
These compounds are just, they're everywhere in girls' lives. You know, triclosan is a compound that's added to soaps and shampoos and toothpaste. It's an antibacterial substance. And so I decided I wanted to see if my daughter, you know, had these compounds in her body and in mine, and then to see if we could change our, you know, the sort of the quantities of these chemicals in our bloodstreams just by changing our diet and sort of the way we, you know, bathe. So we kind of, you know, lived these normal American lives. We tested our urine, and then we did this detox program where we tried not to eat any food that had touched plastic. I became a vegan for a few days, you know, to see if that made a difference. And I didn't use any shampoos or soaps that had, you know, sort of nice fragrances. And so my daughter and I were able to drop our levels of these industrial chemicals, you know, 70, 80, 90% just by changing the way we ate and lived.
And just for a few days. That's what's dramatically surprising to me, is that it wasn't even like you did this for years and had that effect.
Well, so the interesting thing about these chemicals is they work their way through our bodies really quickly.
Okay.
You know, BPA is something that it only stays in our bloodstream, you know, for, you know, a few hours to a day. And then, you know, we metabolize it and we sort of pee it out really quickly. Of course, the problem is that we are exposed almost on a daily basis, you know, to these chemicals because they're in our water supply, they're in our food supply. And we don't really know exactly what these chemicals are doing to our bodies. But according to some lab studies, anyway, we should be concerned because they do seem to be changing the age of puberty. Some of them alter the expression of DNA in breast cells in ways that make the breasts more likely to develop tumors. Some of them are changing behavior patterns and brain development patterns in lab animals. So, you know, we're sort of getting more data all the time, and it's you know, confusing and kind of concerning.
And the other great thing about this book is it doesn't just exclusively focus on women's breasts either. There's a there's a fascinating section and very little attention that I personally have seen paid to male breast cancer. What did you find about that?
Yeah, that was really amazing, interesting. I found out that there's actually a cluster of male breast cancers occurring centered around a Marine base in North Carolina called Camp Lejeune. And the water, the drinking water in Camp Lejeune was actually the most contaminated drinking water ever found in the United States. So for 30 years, from the 1950s to the 1980s, almost a million people drank this water and bathed in it and swam in it. And there are a lot of diseases emerging in this population, including male breast cancer, which is usually a very, very rare disease. Men only get it at about 1% the rate that women get it. But men are actually a great group to study if you want to learn about the effects of chemicals in cancer, because their risk factors, you know, aren't complicated by things like, you know, age at pregnancy or age of puberty or, you know, how long they breastfed. So it's kind of, in some ways, it's an easier population to study. And because it's so rare, you know, if there is a chemical affecting the population, it really stands out.
And also on the cancer front and the breastfeeding front, I was incredibly interested to learn how breastfeeding affects the levels of toxicity that a woman has in her body and the complex controversy of whether or not breastfeeding is a good idea and for how long. And does that just continue to be sort of a nuanced decision mother by mother? Like, what is your recommendation?
Yeah, it's complicated. Of course, this is another new challenge that breasts are facing in modern life. You know, our breast milk is it's pretty contaminated with all sorts of things. Although I would also say that formula is also contaminated. So that, you know, factors into a woman's decision. There are some substances that are really attracted to fat, and breast milk is pretty fatty. So things like flame retardants, pesticides, these are molecules that are really sort of attracted to breast fat and to breast milk, and so they end up in there. I had my breast milk tested too as part of this book, and found out, you know, that my breast milk had flame retardants and had a jet fuel ingredient, had trace amounts of a pesticide. I don't want to really scare women away from breastfeeding. That wasn't the point, because I do think that the benefits of breastfeeding still by far outweigh the risks. But it's kind of just sad, you know, and sobering to know that we've taken this sort of perfect substance. It's really the only food that on the entire planet designed for our benefit, you know, and it really helps us out in so many incredible ways. We know that breast milk really sets a path for our immune system for our entire adult lives, because it helps colonize the infant gut, you know, with the right amounts of bacteria, and it helps our brain cells grow with just the right sort of fatty acids. So it's really this amazing substance, and yet it's so unfortunate that we've, you know, compromised it with these, you know, sort of compounds that have the potential to affect our endocrine systems and our hormone systems and our biology.
The part about flame retardants, and I believe it was it California, the state where there'd been sort of a push by, you know, manufacturers to make it required for flame retardants to be included in furniture, despite the fact that there wasn't really demonstrable evidence that it was necessary. And then just like being in contact with that furniture would change your biology.
Yeah, that's right. We all have California to thank for the fact that we have flame retardants in our bloodstreams. You know, flame retardants, they're not just in our breast milk, but they're in everyone's bodies, men's bodies, women's bodies, children's bodies. And it turns out that the brominated flame retardants that California required in their products are some of the most, you know, toxic chemicals out there. They actually accumulate in body fat. They stay in mammalian tissue for years and years and years. And they cause all kinds of problems with our neurodevelopment and our thyroid levels. So now, thank goodness, I'm happy to say that California is actually rewriting at this very moment. They're rewriting those flammability standards. And the flame retardant that I tested my breast milk for has now been phased out of use. You know, that's how bad it was. And so I'm actually really happy to say that, you know, pretty soon we will all be buying furniture that doesn't have this stuff in it.
That's fantastic news.
Yeah, that's good news.
So speaking of breast cancer and controversies and politics, there is an interesting section in there about the continued sort of narrative by some parties that there's a link between abortion and breast cancer. What is the deal there?
That theory has been pretty well debunked, but for a long time, the anti-abortion movement, you know, would sort of raise this flag and say, oh, if you get an abortion, you'll be at higher risk for breast cancer. This is an argument that sort of crops up every once in a while, but it's been pretty thoroughly debunked now by studies that are not able to show a really persistent link between abortion and breast cancer. We do know that pregnancy seems to protect the breast from breast cancer. You know, if you have children early, you actually lower your risk of breast cancer later on. And women who have children later in life or don't have children do have a higher risk of breast cancer. But things like breastfeeding lower breast cancer risk. So it's a fraught topic, and we do know that pregnancy does affect breast cancer. We don't really know you know, exactly what the role the pill may play, for example, or abortion, but it looks like it's not, they don't play very big roles at all.
So going back to something we talked about much earlier and about early puberty, and so we are simultaneously having an earlier phenotypical response of puberty. We're getting the breasts and menstruation earlier, but sociologically, the experience of adolescence is so much longer now. And so there's this mismatch of like our brains from thousands of years ago and our brains from right now and our bodies from right now and all that sort of stuff. What do you suggest for people who are raising young girls or for a young girl who randomly stumbled across a podcast about sex?
Right, right. Well, you know, my hope, and I think the hope of so many parents, is that we won't continue to see this early breast development in young girls. You know, we'd like to stop this from happening. We know that the girls will be sort of safer and healthier if they can develop a little bit later. And that, it's, you know, typically the breast cancer risk is usually sort of focused around the age of 11 or 12. If you go through puberty after age 12, your breast cancer risk goes down something like 50%. It's a pretty big drop. So what can we do about that? Well, you know, we can try to keep girls thin, which seems to help, keep them athletic when they're younger. We can, you know, encourage healthy diets. And then I think it's really going to be important that we test and regulate these industrial chemicals, because some of them we know are affecting our hormone systems. And yet the government right now is barely testing these things, not testing them for hormonal effects. Very few chemicals have ever been regulated. So this is something a lot of, you know, parental groups, mothers groups, even the endocrine society, you know, medical groups, we're all sort of calling for more rigorous testing of these chemicals in order to prevent this trend from continuing and getting worse.
Well, I feel very hopeful about this, specifically because
good.
This book is read. Are there anybody else? Is there anyone else? Are there other people you suggest people would look to who are doing work in this field, who are trying to change these things, who are just trying to shine light on these things? What are other resources that you would like to point people to?
Yeah, I'm so happy that there really are some great breast cancer groups out there that are looking at, you know, preventing breast cancer and not just sort of detecting it. I think, you know, a lot of the big cancer groups have put so many resources towards, for example, promoting mammography. And now we know, you know, mammography maybe, you know, wasn't all we hoped it to be. And maybe instead, you know, if you find a tumor on a mammogram, you know, it's already sort of too late. You already have the tumor. And wouldn't it be nice to prevent that tumor from occurring at all? And so there are more and more groups looking to prevent breast cancer, including some groups I really like, the Breast Cancer Fund, which is based in San Francisco, a group called the Silent Spring Institute, which is based in Boston. There are a number of environmental health groups, the Environmental Working Group, that's trying to sort of publicize the endocrine disruptors that are in common products. So you can go to their website and you can find out, you know, hey, which is the best sunscreen in terms of, trying to prevent exposure to these chemicals, or, you know, what are the best toothpaste? So, you know, but I think it's kind of unfortunate that there's so much burden on the individual to kind of figure this out, because, you know, frankly, I don't feel like I have a lot of time, and you probably don't either, to walk through the grocery store sort of reading every ingredients label and plotting it into your, you know, chemical testing database. Most of us can't really do that. Which is why I think it's so important to support these groups that are actually trying to alter the legislation and improve chemical safety and testing.
Wouldn't it be nice if companies actually just sort of, I don't know, cared that they didn't kill their customers?
It would just be nice if at least they tested them, you know?
Yeah, at minimum, yeah.
Right.
So again, the book is Breasts, A Natural and Unnatural History, and I totally recommend it to everybody. It was the 2013 LA Times Book Award winner. Like, it's so legit, and you're in the New York Times 100 Notable Books. Like, this is, and it's not like a dense, like, sort of tome, despite the amount of science in it. So, like, first of all, you can't see it, but I'm making the little mouth to kissy to the fingers gesture right now. Fabulous.
Well, we have breasts to thank for the fact that we have lips.
Oh, so yeah.
That's one reason to be very grateful to breasts.
So for those people who might be like, what? Is that because of breastfeeding?
Yeah. You know, we evolved to breastfeed. and breasts evolved to make it easy for us to breastfeed. And so the human mouth and the human palate and our lips sort of co-evolved with the human nipple. And of course, our human palate is very special and unique because we speak with it. And so speech also co-evolved with breastfeeding. And if we weren't breastfeeders, we may never have developed this wonderful ability to communicate.
That is super interesting. So Florence Williams, where else can people find out about you? Where can they see other stuff that you do?
Thanks for asking. I do have a website, and I put my magazine articles up on there and other book information. It's florencewilliams.com. I'm also on Twitter at Flo Will, which is FLOWILL. And I hope to be writing about these topics for a long time.
That's awesome. So, I want to thank you so much for not only being on the show, but also just for writing this book, because I think that it's huge. It's amazing.
Oh, thank you so much.
And thank you everyone for listening, and have a fantastic day. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timory. Sex with Timory, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimory.com, Sex with Timory on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timory_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you.